Hi, it's Linda with the Talking Information Center. It is Happy Friday, April 10th, 2026. And thanks for spending the next 30 minutes reading the Brockton Enterprise. I'm going to start on the front page. Canine cannolis? The spotted hound Barkery has got you covered, by Sam Posman. Small businesses like this are often founded when two things converge. One, there's a problem. And two, someone aware of the problem wants to be the solution. Well, in this case, the problem was pup-centric. Melissa Jones's dog had a lot of allergies, like so many allergies. So Jones created a solution, and thus Spotted Hound Barkery, notice that R, was born. I figured I probably wasn't alone and that a lot of people were looking for a meat-free treat. And so I just decided to do it on my own, she said. Spotted Hound Barkery is a pop-up bakery, barkery, for pups. It was founded in 2023 by Jones, but since then, her sister Megan Welch has joined in on the venture. All the ingredients they use are human-grade, and they supply every item from the same grocery stores the rest of us humans get our own food from. The treats are all built on a base of whole wheat flour, and then depending on the type of treat, they vary from there. They've got crunchy cookies, pretty much your classic dog treat, in four flavors: peanut butter pumpkin, blueberry honey, and cheddar. There are cannolis made with the peanut butter cookie recipe and filled with dog-friendly frosting. There are cupcakes and cakes that are popular for gotcha days and birthdays. And there's popcorn. Not popcorn, popcorn. That's just air-popped popcorn with no salt or butter that's topped with freeze-dried salmon or beef liver or peanut butter powder. We've heard a lot from people who love sharing their popcorn with their dogs. We figured we would take out the things that they don't need to have or aren't good for them and give an alternative, Jones said. Everything they sell is real. The dyes in the frosting are natural. The products are made in-house. There's no corn or anything that's not giving them any sort of nutrients, Welch said about the sister's line of dog treats. If it makes you feel any better, I've tried every product that we make. This is a side gig for both Jones and Welch, so there's only so much time and resources they can put into it. But one goal they've both thought about is getting those crunchy cookies in local mom and pop stores. Some days you're exhausted, Jones says. The last thing you want to do is go home and make bones for the next 2 or 3 hours. But once we go to the events and we see how many people come up and tell us that their dog loves the treats, it makes it all worth it. Being a pop-up, the Barkery doesn't have any defined hours, but in their 3 years of business, they've cemented themselves as mainstays at both the Hingham Farmers Market and the Middleborough Sip and Stroll. Follow the Spotted Hound Barkery on Instagram, at Spotted Hound Barkery, to see their updated schedule. Next up on the front page, Brockton murderer granted parole after 15 years, by Amelia Stern. The man who spent more than 15 years in a Massachusetts prison after being convicted of first-degree murder in a 2004 Brockton shooting has been granted parole, according to a March 24th State Parole Board decision. The six-person parole board unanimously voted March 24th to release Lewis Franklin, 39, to a Department of Mental Health group living environment, the decision said. Franklin was convicted in 2009 of first-degree murder in the shooting death of John Falcone, 30, of Hanson. Franklin allegedly fired 4 shots at Falcone, fatally striking him in the back during a drug deal gone wrong on August 23, 2004, prosecutors said. Franklin was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But a 2024 Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruling made life sentencing without the possibility of parole for defendants 18 to 20 years of age unconstitutional, according to the SJC's Mattis decision. Franklin, who was 18 when he fatally shot Falcone, was resentenced to life with the possibility of parole after 15 years. He appeared before the parole board in December of 2025. The parole board explained in its March 24th decision that Franklin had participated in mental health programming during his incarceration and that he has a low risk level for future violence and has a strong support system available to assist with his transition. With structure and appropriate supports in place, the board concludes that Mr. Franklin's release is compatible with the welfare of society, the board wrote. Plymouth County District Attorney Timothy J. Cruz opposed Franklin's release in a letter sent to the parole board, where he expressed concerns that Franklin only participated in programming after the SJC ruling made him parole eligible. He's participating in programming as a means to an end, to strengthen his case before this board, Cruz wrote. Franklin is one of 59 individuals to be granted parole under the SJC Mattis decision as of March 17th, according to a spokesperson for the state's Executive Office of Public Safety and Security. And lastly on the front page, Brockton High Athletic Director Warns About Staffing, by Jacob Posner. In Brockton, Brockton High School Athletic Director Kevin Caro raised concerns about 9 part-time roles in athletics being eliminated and their jobs taken over by 2 full-time employees, including him. Going forward, he said the district will hire 1 full-time assistant athletic director, and his role will expand to cover grades 6-8, in addition to the high school. He added that the structure is still being finalized. A district spokesperson emphasized that the eliminated roles are not full-time, but stipend positions, which staff members typically hold in addition to their regular jobs. We fully expect that the creation of a new assistant athletic director role will build capacity in athletics rather than reduce it. And we anticipate this new structure will ensure the responsibilities associated with running the department are more evenly distributed, Director of Communications Jordan Maybloom said in an email Friday, April 3rd. Caro made his concerns public during a school committee meeting on March 17th. "It's just something that is weighing on me," he said. "Moving forward, I just don't know what this is going to look like." He said positions that have been eliminated include 5 assistants to the athletic director, as well as football equipment manager, middle school football supervisor, supervisor of middle school sports, and faculty manager. "We're now going to have 2 people that are going to be responsible for scheduling, coordinating, issuing equipment, and supervising 87 teams across the city across the 3 seasons," Caro said, "and that's going to be no small task." Maybloom said the restructured athletic department was, quote, "developed in close cooperation with the Brockton Education Association." After Caro shared this information, no school committee member asked any questions or made any comments. Concern about staffing was one of a long list of issues Caro raised on March 17th, including turf at Marciano Stadium, possibly failing a safety test, a pool deemed unsafe for diving, not enough trainers, broken bleachers, unusable stairs, and difficulty getting Campanelli Stadium ready for the baseball season. Last fall, an engineer discovered that the high school's pool is 1 foot too shallow to safely allow diving, Caro said. That meant the school had to rent out Massasoit Community College's pool this winter for the diving team to use. "And that won't change until the pool is brought up to code," he said. "We have had kids in the past who have hit their head on the bottom of the pool," he added. Also, he said the pool deck doesn't meet standards under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The district is currently in the process of designing a new building for Brockton High School. "There's only 1 trainer for the sports teams at Brockton High," Caro said, "and she can't realistically go everywhere she needs to be. The high school has only had 1 trainer since Caro started in his role in 2016, he noted. "In the fall, we have 7 different sites that our teams play on," he said, "and only 1 person to try to cover all of them." Plus, he said, the Massachusetts Interscholastic Athletic Association has mandated that our athletic trainer travel to all football games, home and away. So there have been times where a trainer has been at a football game, say in Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, and we have a volleyball match going on in our gym. We have a field hockey game. We have a soccer game. And we have no athletic trainer coverage. Thank goodness we haven't had anything major happen, he added, but it could. Committee member Anna Oliver asked whether any school nurses are at games. They are not, Carl said, adding that coaches are told to call 911 if there's a medical emergency. The majority of coaches are trained in first aid, Carl said, responding to a question from member Stephen Pena. The bleachers in the high school gym are in desperate need of repair, Carl said. A carpentry crew would try to fix parts of it, he said, but the bleachers should just be replaced. An estimate from 4 or 5 years ago puts the cost for replacement around $500,000, he said, and it will only have gone up since then. Also, Carl said stairs leading to the gym have been condemned for the past few years and need to be replaced. We've been making do with having people come in the door next to the boys' locker room, but it's not the best way for folks to get in and out, in my opinion, he said. Well, Carl warned on March 17th that Campanelli Stadium would be too wet to be used at the start of the high school baseball season. District spokesperson Jordan Maybloom said on March 31st it would be ready in time. Well, it would depend on how the weather treats us between now and then. We're hopeful the field will be ready for the first home game on April 16th, he wrote in an email. Last year, Campanelli Stadium was too wet to be used for the first month of the spring baseball season. It was soaked, athletic director Kevin Caro said March 17th. There were goose droppings all over the outfield. There was areas of the outfield that had been ruined the summer before from a concert that was there. Carl told school committee members he expected a similar delay this year. Last year, he said the baseball diamond wasn't ready until May. That meant the team had to host home games by renting out BMC Durfee High School's field in Fall River and Adams Field in Quincy. It was a last minute. We have to get this done, he said. I anticipate the same thing this year. This is an ongoing concern that we've had since I've been here, he added, and it comes down to who is responsible for getting Campanelli Stadium ready for our baseball season. Campanelli Stadium is also the home of the Brockton Rocks. The Rocks currently play in the Frontier League, which is a professional league for younger players. According to Caro, the city says it's the Rocks' job to prepare Campanelli Stadium for the high school season, while the Rocks argue it's the city's responsibility. Then, Caro said, the city places the burden on the school department since it's a high school team that needs the field. A city spokesperson told the Enterprise in an email, quote, per the contract, the Rocks are responsible for the maintenance of the field, not the city or BPS. Here is the contract language, quote, the team shall at all times maintain the field to the standards of other teams in the Frontier League, and that the field meets such standards prior to the first seasonal Brockton High School baseball team practice and for each Brockton High School home baseball game. Next up, will firefighter's drunken driving case be dismissed by Peter Blandino? A Pembroke firefighter arrested in February and charged with drunken driving will have his case dismissed, provided he completes a one-year probationary period without incident and a driver alcohol education program, according to court records. Joseph Sensata, 35, changed his plea from not guilty to, quote, sufficient facts on March 16th before Brockton Superior Court Judge Daniel DiLorati, according to the case docket. Sensata was found not responsible for a civil marked lanes violation. Under the terms of probation, Sensata was ordered to give up his license for 45 days and must pay a total of $350 in financial assessments, as well as the $250 fee for the driver alcohol education program, court records show. Sensata was off duty at the time of his February 22nd arrest. He crashed his car into a utility pole in Abington and registered a .244 reading on a portable breathalyzer, more than three times the legal limit, according to a police report. A witness told police that the driver of the Chevrolet, later identified as Sensata, was tailgating him and swerved erratically. The witness said he pulled over to let Sensata pass, and the Chevrolet swerved into the utility pole, stating that the collision caused the Chevrolet to go airborne and crash down into the ground, according to the police report. Sincotta, who was alone in the vehicle, was not injured and declined medical attention, the report stated. The arresting officer observed mildly bloodshot and glassy eyes, slurred speech, and an overpowering odor of alcoholic beverages emanating from Sincotta's breath, the report states. Sincotta failed 3 field sobriety tests, the walk and turn, the one-leg stand, and the horizontal and vertical gaze nystagmus tests, according to the police report. It should be noted that the vertical gaze nystagmus is typically only observed in individuals who are subject to a high degree of intoxication, the report states. At the Abington police station, the arresting officers found a receipt from O'Toole's Pub in Whitman for $155.69, the report notes. After booking, Sincotta agreed to take an evidentiary breath test, which is more accurate than the portable breath test, according to the report. In order to take the test, police required Sincotta to refrain from belching, coughing, or touching his face and mouth for 15 minutes, the report says, which he was unable to do. Good causes, good meals, 3 charitable causes in Brockton area. Looking to eat some good food while helping out some good causes? We've got you covered. This week, we've gone ahead and highlighted 3 food-related fundraisers and events around town. Whether you opt to show up for the music, or the pancakes, or the pizza, the events are all opportunities to aid in the development and fundraising of causes close to the heart. All the events take place over the next couple of weeks in the Brockton area, so there's plenty of time to plan ahead. Music for Food. On Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m., the Brockton Symphony Orchestra will host a free concert at the Christ Congregational Church in Brockton, 1350 Pleasant Street in Brockton. Though anyone is welcome to attend, there is a suggested donation of $25. The concert is being held to raise funds for the Charity Guild, a Brockton area food bank nonprofit, committed to providing basic and necessary services to those unable to meet their primary needs of food, clothing, and household goods. Brockton Sale plus Wood-Fired Pizza. Brockton's Animal Protection Center is holding a fundraiser of their own on Friday, April 10th. The event kicks off a string of fundraisers in the center as planned over the weekend at 1300 West Elm Street in Brockton. It's a book sale and pizza night, so it's pretty self-explanatory. But there will be a large selection of gently used books for sale, as well as wood-fired pizza from Easton's Longwater Farm. Earth Day Pancakes. Perhaps more of a celebration than a fundraiser, but on Friday, April 17th at 6 p.m., the Central Square Congregational Church at 71 Central Square, Bridgewater, will be hosting a pancake dinner to celebrate Earth Day. The event is free for those under 4 years old, $5 for those ages 4 through 17, and $10 for those older than 17. For families, you can also pay $25 to cover food for the whole lot. The church is accepting both volunteers and donations. Brockton's Lisa LeMay wins Best in Class Food Service Award by Beth McDermott. Lisa LeMay, manager of the Rusty Lantern Market in Brockton, received the 2026 Food Service Manager Award from the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association, according to a community announcement. LeMay has been with the Rusty Lantern for more than 5 years and has over 35 years of experience in the food, restaurant, beverage, and grocery retail industries, according to community announcement. She previously owned Le Saucier, America's first hot sauce store in Faneuil Hall, and Gypsy Kitchen Gourmet in Quincy. Our team takes pride in our work, and fresh food and specialty beverage preparation and service is a big part of what we do. Our menu offers a lot of variety throughout the day parts. It takes dedication to maintain our standards and delight our customers, and our customers really seem to appreciate that. Every day is exciting, LeMay said in the announcement. We're honored to receive recognition for our work, she continued. In other news, Americans worry most over healthcare costs by Liz Freeman. A new Gallup poll found healthcare access and affordability is a top concern among American households, with 61% saying they worry a great deal about it. It comes in as the number one domestic policy issue among a list of 16, outweighing the economy, inflation, federal spending, and the budget deficit. The survey conducted in March compares how priorities over domestic issues have changed since 2025. Details on how many Americans were surveyed were not readily available. The Gallup survey found Americans' concern with the economy has dipped some in 2026, as 51% of those surveyed said they'd worried a great deal about it, a drop from 60% in 2025. Crime is less concerning now, coming in at 39% compared to 45% holding that view in 2025. Illegal immigration came in at 33% in 2026 compared to 40% a year earlier. Healthcare costs and access had been the top domestic policy issue for Americans from 2015 to 2020, according to Gallup. After 2020, the economy took the top spot. While healthcare roughly tied the economy as Americans' top concern in 2025, it now leads by a full 10 points, according to the survey. Healthcare access and cost dominated federal policies for much of 2025, which could explain why it rose in importance in the minds of Americans. The start of 2026 ushered in the loss of enhanced tax credits for Americans who have relied on healthcare coverage through the Affordable Care Act. Congress failed in 2025 to renew the tax credits, or subsidies, that helped make premiums manageable for enrollees. The credits were put in place by the Biden administration during the COVID-19 pandemic. Data released in early February by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services said planned signups for 2026 were down by more than 1 million and counting compared to a year earlier. Updated figures released in late March show 1.2 million Americans dropped enrollment, with 23.1 million signing up for coverage in 2026. The average out-of-pocket premium jumped from $113 a month in 2025 to $178 a month in 2026, according to the new federal data. Many enrollees switched to plans with lower premiums but much higher deductibles, according to the Center on Budget and Budget Priorities, a nonpartisan research and policy institute. Even though many enrollees shifted into lower-tier plans with higher deductibles, they're still paying an average of $65 more each month in premiums than in 2025, or nearly $800 more over the course of the year, according to the Budget and Policy Center. Enrollment in bronze plans, which come with deductibles averaging more than $7,000 per person, jumped from 30% of all enrollees in 2025 to 40% in 2026, according to the Budget and Policy Center. With higher deductibles, enrollees are likely to put off going to doctors and getting needed medical attention, since they face paying more out of pocket, according to the center. Behind healthcare and the economy, inflation came in third, with 50% of those surveyed saying they worry a great deal about it. The federal budget and deficit shares that level of worry. ICE targeted father of disabled kids, by Richard Rulas. In Phoenix, Erasmo Ubuado Reyes was on his way to work installing drywall when federal officers stopped him in February. Before the officers took him into custody, he told them he was the father of two disabled children who used wheelchairs. Ubuado Reyes was targeted by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers as part of a crackdown that President Donald Trump said would focus on the worst of the worst people who were in the country illegally. At a federal court hearing, though, a judge described Ubuado Reyes as being among the best of the people who had appeared before him in such cases. Magistrate Judge John Boyle lauded Ubuado Reyes for his 20 years of work installing drywall at the February 17th hearing. And from what I can tell, doing nothing but supporting your family, which has to be more difficult in your circumstance and your family's circumstance than many, Boyle said from the bench. The judge ordered Ebueto Reyes released from criminal custody ahead of his pending trial. But he wasn't freed. Rather, he was taken into immigration custody, and on March 7th, he was removed to Mexico, a U.S. Department of Homeland Security spokesperson said. His wife of 25 years, Rosa Varenis Calderon, finds herself in the home the family moved into 10 years ago, raising her four children without the financial and emotional support her husband provided. "Right now, I don't know what I'm going to do," she said during an interview at the house. In Mexico, Ebueto Reyes said he feels lost and unsure what comes next for his family. "I'm just suffering," he said during a phone interview with the Arizona Republic, part of the USA Today network. "I'm in agony." Ebueto Reyes moved in with his parents, who run a ranch in Ciudad Cuauhtémoc in Chihuahua, Mexico. Days after his deportation, the family made the 12-hour drive from Phoenix to visit him. The two parents saw that their children, both born with mitochondrial disease, would not do well in Mexico. The sidewalks in the city were uneven and had no ramps, not friendly to the wheelchairs they use. Veronese Calderon said the medical services her daughters would get in Mexico pale in comparison to those in the United States. Plus, she said, she felt the sting of discrimination against people with disabilities during their days there. "There is no life for my children there," she said. Veronese Calderon knows she has decisions to make about her family's future, but during a March 26 interview, she said she had no definite answers on how they would stay in their home. "We still haven't processed what's happening to us," she said. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have today with the Brockton Enterprise. I wish you a wonderful weekend.